And where was Enoch? Prosperously sailed the ship Good Fortune, though at setting forth, the Biscay roughly ridging eastward shook and almost overwhelmed her. Yet unvexed, she slipped across the summer of the world. Then, after a long tumble about the Cape and frequent interchange of foul and fair, she passing through the summer world again, the breath of heaven came continually and sent her sweetly by the Golden Isles, till silent in her oriental haven. There, Enoch traded for himself and bought quaint monsters for the market of those times, a gilded dragon also for the babes. Less lucky her home voyage. At first, indeed, through many a fair sea circle, day by day, scarce rocking, her full-busted figurehead stared o'er the ripple feathering from her bow. Then followed calms, then winds variable, then baffling, a long course of them, and last storm, such as drove her under moonless heavens, till hard upon the cry of breakers came the crash of ruin, and the loss of all but Enoch and two others. Half the night, buoyed upon floating tackle and broken spars, these drifted, stranding on an isle at morn, rich, but the loneliest in a lonely sea. No want was there of human sustenance, soft fruitage, mighty nuts, and nourishing roots, nor, save for pity, was it hard to take. The helpless life so wild that it was tame. There, in a seaward-gazing mountain gorge, they built and thatched with leaves of palm a hut, half native cavern. So the three, set in this Eden of all plenteousness, dwelt with eternal summer, ill content. For the youngest, hardly more than a boy, hurt in that night of sudden ruin and wreck, lay lingering out of 5 years death in life. They could not leave him. After he was gone, the two remaining found a fallen stem, and Enoch's comrade, careless of himself, fire hollowing this in Indian fashion, fell sun-stricken. And that other lived alone. In those two deaths, he read God's warning, wait. The mountain wooded to the peak, the lawns and winding glades high up like ways to heaven, the slender cocoa's drooping crown of plumes, the lightning flash of insect and of bird, the luster of the long convolvuluses that coiled round the stately stems and ran even to the limit of the land, the glows, the glories of the broad belt of the world, all these he saw. But what he fain had seen, he could not see. The kindly human face, nor ever hear a kindly word, but heard the myriad shriek of wheeling ocean fowl, the league-long roller thundering on the reef, the moving whisper of huge trees that branched and blossomed in the zenith, or the sweep of some precipitous rivulet to the wave as down the shore he ranged, or all day long sat often in the seaward gazing gorge, a shipwrecked sailor, waiting for a sail. No sail from day to day. But every day, the sunrise broken into scarlet shafts among the palms and ferns and precipices, the blaze upon the waters to the east, the blaze upon his island overhead, the blaze upon the waters to the west. Then the great stars that glowed themselves in heaven, the hollow bellowing ocean, and again the scarlet shafts of sunrise. But no sail. There, often, as he watched or seemed to watch, so still the golden lizard on him paused. A phantom made of many phantoms moved before him, haunting him, or he himself moved, haunting people, things, and places known far in a darker isle beyond the line. The babes, their babble, Annie, the small house, the climbing street, the mill, the leafy lanes, the peacock yew tree, the horse he drove, the boat he sold, the chill November dawns and dewy glooming downs, the gentle shower, the smell of dying leaves, and the low moan of leaden-colored seas. Once, likewise, in the ringing of his ears, though faintly, merrily, far and far away, he heard the pealing of his parish bells. Then, though he knew not wherefore, started up, shuddering, and when the beauteous, hateful isle returned upon him, had not his poor heart spoken with that which, being everywhere, lets none who speaks with him seem all alone? Surely, the man had died of solitude.